Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So, Lauren, have you ever heard Shawnee's far-flung forecast?
I have not.
It's a regular feature on the Sunday show. And I, as I've said many times, it's my favorite part of the Sunday show. It's the only reason I show up.
He's being nice.
Ooh. It's the only reason I show up every Sunday.
He's being nice.
Where, well, now we got to hear it.
Yeah, and so Shawnee puts this together every week on Sunday, and it's always it's a very interesting fact, and he gives us the weather forecast in some far-flung place. Is that an accurate description,
Shawnee? You're right on the money. Okay. Yep. So this afternoon, since you, this is by request now.
Yeah, this is by request. He has nothing planned.
We're talking about this is by request. Yep. Our far-flung forecast for this Friday afternoon. Oh, and you have the music bed.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Montgomery, Alabama. Montgomery, Alabama, which is the capital city of the state of Alabama.
I did not know that.
And did you also know that it's the seat of Montgomery County?
I did not know that.
Population 205,764.
Yeah, is Lauren still awake?
Wait, yes. We're talking about Arizona, right? What?
It's in the southeastern part of the state, which means that they probably will be affected in some way by Hurricane Dorian, which is now a Category 3 storm.
Uh-oh.
But Montgomery, Alabama is the birthplace of someone who is being honored here in Chicago this weekend at the Chicago Jazz Festival, Nat King Cole.
Wow.
Born in Montgomery, Alabama 100 years ago this past March.
Yeah.
And his brother, Freddie Cole, did the one of the main sets at the Pritzker Pavilion last night to open the Chicago Jazz Festival.
Who's shouting in there?
Steve Bertrand's on the phone. He's doing an interview.
Does he know that you don't have to shout into a phone that people can hear you if you don't shout?
Sarah, will you get me my house?
So are you going to play a little Nat King Cole now to finish off the segment?
This just was kind of such a spur of the moment. I didn't call up
any
music for it. No, I'm sorry. But his brother, Freddie. Oh, you did it.
L is for the way you look at me.
This might be my favorite Nat King Cole song.
Is for the only one.
I'm hard pressed to name a favorite.
I love it. Oh, I was listening. I have a Nat King Cole's greatest hits. And I've forgotten how many incredible songs. And of course, there's Unforgettable.
Yep.
That I think it probably is a favorite of a lot of people.
Sure.
Not only the original, but the
remake, if you will.
Yeah,
the duet with his daughter, Natalie.
Yeah. You know what else I like? Walk My Baby Back Home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song that he does.
Yep.
There's some very cool, very hip songs on there. People think, who? Nat King who?
No.
Do yourself a favor and learn about Nat King Cole. Hippest music that there is. Right?
Yes. And I also highly recommend an album called The After Midnight Sessions from 1956. Oh, incomparable.
Look at you, Daddy-O.
Incomparable.
He has one of my favorite Christmas albums.
Oh, yeah, of course. There you go, the Christmas album. Sure.
Nuts roasting on an open fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
very,
one of the
very
greatest.
Hip version of Route 66 The After Midnight Sessions.
You know what? That's how I remember whether you say root or route. 66.
Either way.
I have to sing the song in my head.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, Route 66 does not go through Montgomery, but they are a hot day today. It's 90 and sunny in Montgomery, Alabama this afternoon.
I'm fascinated by Bertrand screaming on the phone.
And then I said, yeah, pick up some cottage cheese. What?
Do the phones not work in there?
No, they're working. They're working. It can be interesting if you're trying to do some Q&A on the phone in here. But
very interesting.
He's winding up now. He's finished.
Fascinating. Lauren, what do you think of the far-flung forecast?
I like it. It's intriguing.
Yeah.
Makes you kind of remember that there's places outside of Chicago.
Yeah, and they're that, you know what the thing is? What I like, there's an interesting story about everywhere.
That's right.
No matter how big, no matter how small, there are interesting stories about everywhere. And Shawnee, you know, travels a lot, does a lot of road trips, and finds these little interesting stories along the way.
Yep. We've got a good one coming up for Sunday.
Okay.
Tied to a big piece of history.
All right. I will try to pay attention.
Do I have to pay attention now? How long are you here?
I believe till 3 o'clock.
Okay.
I believe
all
that's
right.
when
well, I'm going to go to lunch now.
Yeah. Okay. Go grab some lunch. We're going to, you're talking about the Category 3 hurricane.
Correct.
We're going to talk with meteorologist Mike Hamernick and also a friend of mine who is a television producer in the Miami area to tell us how people are preparing and getting ready there. So hurricane update next, WGN. Next week on WGN Morning News, I'll be talking with my pal Common, Oscar winner, Grammy winner, appearing at Ravinia tomorrow night with Queen Latifah, and he's making some appearances around Chicago at different schools. He's very, very involved in education and young people in the community here in Chicago. We're going to sit down and talk with him over the weekend. We'll have that for you Monday morning. Tuesday morning, rather, forgot about the holiday, on Chicago's number one WGN-TV morning news. And WGN-TV, of course, is where you also see meteorologist Mike Hamernick. Mike, I thought as long as I've got Shawnee here today, and I may as well bring all the Sunday morning people in here with me, right?
Yeah, the band's back together.
The band is back together here on a Friday afternoon. I'm glad you're there because, you know, when there is severe weather, I love when you're in the weather office and you can kind of sort it out and explain and make sense of it all. How bad is it getting in Florida right now?
Well, for right now, Florida is fine. It's not a problem yet. The storm is still way out in the Atlantic Ocean over open waters. But indications are by Monday, it is going to start to get pretty bad in central Florida as the storm continues to strengthen. In fact, in just the last 20 minutes or so, the Hurricane Center upgraded this storm to a Category 3 with top winds of 115 miles per hour. It's still, again, well offshore, but it is churning its way north and west toward the Florida coast in the Bahama Islands and northern Bahama Islands at about 10 miles per hour. And all signs point toward a landfall somewhere between Fort Lauderdale and Daytona Beach in the central Florida coast, east coast, perhaps somewhere around Melbourne, the Space Coast, maybe as far south as West Palm Beach. So it's that area that needs to be most concerned with this storm as it begins to approach. And it's going to be a formidable one, expected to be 140 mile per hour winds, a Category 4 storm as it makes landfall sometime on Monday, perhaps into early Tuesday.
How will this compare with other major storms that have hit the South Florida area, other parts of the Caribbean?
Well, we've had Michael just a year ago, and that was a very intense storm as it moved into Florida. But it's been a while since we've had a storm this strong approach the east coast of Florida. Most notable storm, of course, is Andrew, which was a much stronger storm as it moved in just near the Miami area. That was packing winds of 175 miles per hour. So hopefully we will not be dealing with a storm quite that strong, but it's still going to be a very intense storm. It could wreak a lot of damage. In fact, I saw one insurance estimate already. They're talking, you know, anywhere from $50 to $100 billion of damage, perhaps, from the storm in Florida,
wow,
which is just mind-boggling as far as that is concerned, because it's such a heavily populated area.
Sure. Everything is focused on that area right now.
Right,
Are there other areas that may be affected by this?
Well, once the storm does make landfall, the question then is, where does it go? And right now we're getting signs that it may curve northward, either along the coast or just inland, which would spell trouble for northern Florida, not necessarily the panhandle, but the northern Florida, let's say Jacksonville, and then just ride up along the coast, curl north and east, impacting Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. So that's the latest thinking. It could bring devastating rains to those states. if it doesn't speed up. So this could be quite a storm if it does take that track, making landfall in central Florida and then curling north, producing not only strong winds but extremely heavy rains across much of the southeast. So, yeah, this could be a week-long storm or maybe a 3 or 4 day storm as it rides along the east coast.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're not just talking Florida, but as far as the winds are concerned, Florida is the number one concern, yes.
All right. Mike, thank you for the update on that.
You bet, Dean.
We will check in periodically to see how things are going. In the meantime, this is my friend John Hayden, who is a television producer for a very popular show in the Miami area called Deco Drive. And, John, I mean, when you get warnings like this, you know, I know it's serious, but those of you who live in that area, you guys go through this all the time. Is it sort of routine for you all?
Hi, Dean. You know, it is routine, and that's really the biggest problem sometimes, that people, you know, they're like, oh, we went through this, and then it shifted to the west, and we didn't get hit. And so we're really afraid that people aren't going to prepare or take it seriously because we get it all the time. But honestly, right now, the entire east coast of Florida is in what we call the cone of concern, you know, where it could possibly hit.
Yeah.
And people are taking it seriously. As early as Wednesday, people were starting to line up to fill up their gas tanks, panic buying water at the grocery stores and things like that. So I think people are taking it seriously. The main concern here is we have no idea where the storm is going to hit, so you can't evacuate to anywhere. You know,
right.
You could literally evacuate and go right into the eye of where the eye of the storm ends up being.
Into where it's worse, of course, yeah. So, you know, this far ahead until they know better where the track of the storm is going to go, really sort of everybody has to be on high alert. Is a storm like this similar to other storms that you all have been through in the Florida, South Florida area?
Honestly, the one, from what it looks like it's going to be, the thing that I could compare it to the most would be Wilma, which was back in 2005, the fall of 2005, and that came through. I think it hit the West Coast as a 3 and came across the state and hit us as a 2. I live in Fort Lauderdale, and that was pretty bad. Some parts of the area were without power for a month. There were ice lines and things like that for several weeks after the storm, just helping people get by day to day. And I think that we could be seeing something like that again with this storm. The problem is so many people move to Florida so often that even though that was just 14 years ago, there's a bunch of people who have not been through a major storm that live in the Miami, Lauderdale, Palm Beach area.
I was thinking about that earlier, that if I were there, you know, if I were living there, or had I gone down there on an assignment, I would have absolutely no idea what to do for a hurricane. We've been through tornadoes here. I know what to do here in my area. And I guess it's similar to something like a tornado, that going through a hurricane, only, much more, high intensity, I guess. But I would be one of those people that, I'd be one of those people you see on someone's roof that CNN shoots with a helicopter.
Yes. I was almost one of those people if I hadn't been working at the news station during Wilma. Because, you really don't know what to do. And a lot of people do think it's like a tornado, and the effects of it are much like that. But it's just so intense and ongoing. You know, a tornado's done in, 5 or 6 minutes,
right.
Usually. This is going to hover over us for a while. Now, the area of the winds or the wind field may not extend more than 100 miles or so. So we won't be in that the whole time. But this is going to look to be slow and very rain-filled and dump rain for days and days. And if I don't know if people will remember Houston about 2 years ago, they got hit with a hurricane, which was bad, but then it just stopped and hovered and just drenched and flooded so much of that city.
Right.
And that's what we're really afraid of at this point.
Yeah, so, everybody will be keeping an eye on our meteorologists on all the weather channels that are reporting, and keep everybody posted on what's going on. You stay safe during all of this. You're doing well. I have not seen you forever. This is one of the greatest guys that I know. When I go off and doing these interviews in different cities, there's a pack of other entertainment journalists and producers who do the same thing. And John is one of my favorite people to run into on those things all the time.
Dean, it has been too long, man. We will get together soon once I get my house dried out.
Okay. Yeah, get things drained out, please, before anything happens. John Hayden from Deco Drive in South Florida. Dean Richards in for John Williams today on 720 WGN. Have you ever been in a hurricane, Steve?
You know, when I was traveling with the Bears, and I don't have the specific remembrance, but it was, I don't know if it was Andrew or which one, but the Bears played Miami, and we were there. It was just before it hit, so we were there in some of the early winds. So the answer is no, but I felt one coming.
But you felt like the portion of
the
that.
The start of something big.
I never have either, but I've been in a couple of, I remember the 1967 tornadoes. I will never forget what the sky looked like and what it sounded like outside when that happened. But never in a hurricane. I've been in a couple of mild earthquakes when I've been out in California.
Yeah, I've had earthquakes.
Do you know what to do? I mean, if you were in a place where there was a hurricane, would you know what to do?
I shout, Auntie M, Auntie M.
grab a bicycle and your little dog,
right,
too.
Exactly.
I wouldn't know what to do. No. I didn't know what to do. I was at a hotel, and you started to feel things shaking, and then a loudspeaker in the hotel said to take the stairs, evacuate the hotel, and everybody's outside in bathrobes and less than that. But I didn't know what to do for an earthquake. I wouldn't know what to do.
All I know is you stand, if you're inside, stand in a doorway. And I happened to be on a porch when there were like two minor ones about 45 minutes apart from each other.
Which is the one where you get in a bathtub? Isn't there something where you're supposed to get in a bathtub? And
that
put...
might be a tornado just to protect you from debris. Yeah.
Seems like an odd time to take a bath.
Unless you're by a big window in a bathtub, then probably still not a good idea.
I guess so. What's the worst? Here's my question. 312-981-7200. What's the worst weather situation that you've ever been in? Worst weather situation. I don't think my earthquake was the worst I've ever been in. The tornado was pretty serious. It very definitely got my attention. And I was just a little kid when that happened. But the worst have been some blizzards that I've been in. Very definitely. Lauren, what about you? Worst weather that you've ever been in?
I was going to say, it's never really been too bad, but it's been, you know, tornado warning bad enough. I haven't actually seen it go by. And blizzards as well. So a lot of snow, but never been snowed in or anything.
There was a tornado that hit Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, I don't know, 10 years ago or more. Probably more. Well, a lot more. And I was there for that. We were family vacation. And on the ocean, and sort of had a horseshoe building. And when the winds came through, it was picking up the chairs along the pool, like the Wizard of Oz, picking them straight up. It was the weirdest thing. You'd see this chair just sort of almost levitate off the ground.
And it's probably not like a lightweight aluminum chair.
No, it was pretty lightweight. Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Okay. But I mean, you've seen the footage on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Where these things come along, and, you know, they're where you see cars get picked up and, you know, pushed a long way.
My dad had the house lifted off ahead of him, above him, when he was a kid.
He was in the house, and the house lifted.
The family off was in the basement, and the house lifted off the foundation.
Wow!
If you go down 57, just south of Piatone, there's a silo just east of the road. That was where the farm was. The only thing left now is a silo.
Wow. Well, no wonder you have this Wizard of Oz.
I know, it's a fascination.
Obsession.
So as a family, you know, living down there where you could see through the fields, we used to sit in lawn chairs and watch the storms come in.
Wow.
There was no cable. Are you kidding me?
You kids don't know how to entertain yourselves.
The Weather Channel was DeZelm, whatever was coming from DeZelm.
Whatever was out there. Worst weather situation. I'm just curious. And, you know, to help us a little bit relate to what the people in Florida might be facing now, 312-981-7200. Hi, Joan, you're on WGN.
Hi, I remember the Oak Lawn tornado.
Right. Was that the 1967 one?
Yes. I had my son in the car. He was young. And we were picking my mom up at work on 95th Street. And we got a little closer, and the sky turned green. The radio went out, and the car started shaking. And then there was hailstone. And then we didn't go any further. But the next day, my sister and I collected clothes and bedding, and we took them out there for the people.
Yeah.
And there were several buildings, and they sent us to the wrong building, and they sent us to the one where they had all the bodies.
Oh, wow.
And we were young. We were in our early, like, 16 and 18.
Yeah.
And it was kind of upsetting.
Oh, that's horrifying.
And to see all the buildings and where we were going to pick up my mom, it was okay. But where we were going shopping, two of the stores had already been devastated.
Yeah. What do you remember?
Happy we didn't get that far.
What do you remember visually when this was going on? What do you remember hearing? And in really, here's the reason that I ask is because it was 1967. I wasn't in Oak Lawn. I was living on the southeast side of Chicago then. But the tornado came right down our street. And I remember what the skies looked like. This, I don't even know how to describe, kind of green.
Yeah.
It was kind of green. And the sound was the eeriest sound, something that I don't think I had ever heard. And I don't think I've ever heard since then.
But we noticed everything got so quiet. There wasn't a bird around. There wasn't anything before that. And it seemed kind of strange. And then, then we found out afterwards why. But my dad was in one on 87th Street. He was in a gas station he worked in, and it was across the street from him. And that might have been the one you had. And he watched it go by, and he had no idea what it was because at that time we didn't know what tornadoes were.
Right, right.
You know, and he said, my God, because there was a big ice cream parlor there. I can't remember the name of it. And he said that whole thing got tore down.
Right. Oh, I remember it made a big swath right through the neighborhood. But
yeah.
Oak Lawn was even worse.
Oh, my God.
It was devastating in Oak Lawn.
Like we did to drop off stuff that night, the Oak Lawn High School had been devastated, and it looked like the bombed out shelter in England.
Right,
it had the big lights on it,
right.
And all you seen was half a building.
Yep.
And it was just the most terrifying thing.
Here's my dopey side story to go along with this. While this disaster was going on outside. I must have been maybe 12 or 13 years old, and my buddy Charlie and I finally had gotten up enough nerve to ask two girls if they wanted to come over and listen to records. And we're sitting in the basement of somebody's house. It must have been one of the four of us. I don't think it was my house. Listening to records, and none of us wanted to stop the date because I'm pretty sure it was the first time that any of us had been, you know, like a boy-girl kind of.
Right.
The tornado's going outside, but, you know, we didn't care. We were busy listening to 45s. Thanks for the call, Joan. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
I appreciate that. This is Becky. Now, you have been in a tornado, huh, Becky?
No, I've been in hurricanes.
Oh, hurricanes. Hurricanes.
Yeah. Well, there was a tornado. I grew up in Barrington. It hit Barrington, jumped over, and hit Island Lake, and a number of people were killed. Mm. So we saw the super green and the hail and things, but it didn't hit where I was. But my parents were living off the coast of Pensacola on an island, and it was Hurricane Erin, which I'm thinking was 92, 93. And it was a storm. It's a storm. No big deal. Okay, it's a one. We'll stick in the house. It goes to a two. They close all the bridges. We had to stay. There was no place to go. You couldn't get off the island. Mm-hmm. So, but we hunkered down with sleeping bags and things in the center of the house because literally Florida, every room has a huge window. But we had to, I had to jump in the canal and cross tie my dad's boat. And it was just a roar that just went on. And you could glance out the window and the just, you know, those cages that people put over their swimming pools.
Right, right.
Those were rolled up in balls and going by. There were just stuff everywhere. And then it's dead silent, and you run outside, and there is that perfect eye hole of blue sky. It's kind of the freakiest thing I've ever seen.
That is so weird.
We then had to jump. I had to jump back into the canal and tie the boat the other way because the wind now comes back a different way. So, but it seemed to go on quite a long time. I think tornadoes go over fairly quickly, but the hurricane seemed like hours and hours. And then when Ivan hit a few years later, I had to get my parents to leave. It was a Cat 4, and they were like, yeah, we're going to stick it out. I'm like, heck no. You know, jumped on a plane and got them out of there. And
I never understand that. When I see people on the news in those kind of situations, and, you know, I guess I understand you don't want to leave your home. I guess I understand if you've been through this many times and you feel like you can, you know, wait it out, go through the storm.
Well, they're older.
I would be out of there so fast. Yeah, right.
They figure they can stick it out, but I had to go down and say, we're out of there. If I could throw a quick story in, my father was a businessman, had to drive a sedan for business his whole life. So when he retired, he bought a big old pickup truck, which, of course, my mother was askance. You know, what do you need a pickup truck? Well, the first time they had to be evacuated, my dad gets in the car. All the back is filled with all mom stuff, and she's sitting there in a mink coat. And he's like, what in the heck are you doing in a mink coat? She said, well, if they find my body, I want them to know I've got some money and some talking somewhere.
That is hilarious.
So he was kissing that pickup truck for a while.
That is funny. That is a funny, funny story. I appreciate the call. Thank you, Becky. Have a great day today.
Yeah, good luck to everybody who's having to deal with the hurricane. It is not fun.
Absolutely. Our thoughts and prayers are with all of our friends in Florida. This one, a text, the Chicago heat wave of 1995, you know, now that I think of it, you know, that was deadly for so many people. What a horrible weather situation to be in. This text says, we all lost electricity, so many died. I will never forget that. As the body count was going up every day, higher and higher and higher. And here's an interesting one. We don't have very many texts about cold weather and snow. Do we have any on the phones? We don't have any on the phones. Maybe people like snow, just like this one does from the 815 area code. I would love to be snowed into my house. I love snow. And if it snowed as much as I want, nobody would be outside. So I guess some people like the solitude, the beauty. It is pretty when it happens. Till you get out there with your snow shovel, then it's not so pretty anymore. Dean Richards in for John Williams today. 312-981-7200. After 2 o'clock, the creators of the Comedy Central series Southside join us. Show is just renewed for a second season. We'll also talk about things going on in Chicago for the weekend. Got my weekend movie reviews. And also a couple of experts analyzed Mayor Lightfoot's budget speech from last night. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200. The texts and the calls about the worst kind of weather situation that you've been in. Got an update on what's headed towards South Florida. And I was just curious what some of you and I have gone through, the worst kind of weather situations. Definitely, Blizzard of 78 was horrible. I forget what year it was that there was another incredible blizzard. Doesn't seem like that long ago. Maybe the early 2000s, something like that.
Well, there was the Valentine's Day one.
Maybe that's the one that I'm thinking.
Where people just left their cars on the expressways.
Oh, right. Didn't Roger Badish? Was that the one where Roger Badish got trapped on Lakeshore Drive and had to, they had to come and rescue him, I think, right?
That was the Great Badish Storm.
The Great Badish Storm, as historians will call it from now on. But with me, I was driving on, it was out in the west suburbs, and I was on probably a side road that I shouldn't have been on during a blizzard. My car goes off the road, and I'm stranded in the car. My car is getting buried in the snow. Fortunately, a trucker happened to come along and saw the lights of my car and got in there, got me out, and took me to safety. But that was pretty terrifying. 312-981-7200. And Kate, your worst weather situation was actually on an airplane?
Yes, actually, it was in the mid-80s. I was flying home from Detroit. I did a lot of traveling in that. Flying home, the turbulence was so bad that I had a cocktail in my hand, and the turbulence was so bad, the cocktail went up and came back down.
Oh, wow.
And I also had a gentleman next to me pouring his life out to me, telling me that he has illegitimate children and all this.
Trying to clear his conscience a little bit.
I guess. And all I did, I had to laugh because I thought, oh, my God, are we even going to make it, you know, to the airport and that? And
you were worried about your drink.
You know what? I was worried about my life.
Yeah.
But I didn't know exactly how to handle it. I listened to this guy. He told me everything about his twins that he has and all this kind of stuff. And then we finally land at Midway. We had to turn around a few times. And we finally land, and it was bumpy as could be.
Yeah, that's pretty terrifying when, I mean, any kind of turbulence is disturbing, but sometimes when it's really, really, really severe, it is nothing short of terrifying. Thank you very much for your call. Annette, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi.
What was your situation?
There's a race, a sailboat race, every year from San Diego to Cabo San Lucas, 800 miles, and my oldest brother is a big sailor, and he said, come on, sis, it'll be a trip of a lifetime. We had a 60-foot sailboat, got the boat all ready, and the day of the race, he said, I have to go back to work. These are the five people you'll be sailing with. It's 11 days to Cabo, get the boat there safely. And, of course, leaving San Diego, it was beautiful, typical San Diego weather. But that night, following seas,
the
waves.
The weather started getting rough. The tiny ship was tossed.
Exactly. We lost radio power.
Wow.
The boat got turned around. We had no idea. We didn't see anybody in the fleet. There were about 115 boats that left San Diego that year, and only 98 made it to Cabo. Apparently, many turned around after the first and second night. It was supposed to be an idyllic moonlit night sails. It's a family sail, but it was, I guess, one of the roughest races they've ever had.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I was thinking earlier, I wouldn't know what to do if I was in a weather emergency in other places. For example, would you know what to do during a hurricane?
Well, during a hurricane, no. I've been to Florida many times right after or left before, and my sister's in the middle of the state with a bunch of horses, and she says you just batten down the hatches and hope for the best.
Well I guess that's what it amounts to. I see them boarding up their windows, so I presume to keep the glass from breaking and blowing into your house.
With the big horses and things, they can't move them out of
right.
that part of the state. Because where do you go?
Where do you go with how many horses does your sister have?
She has three of the Farisians.
Wow. Yeah, that's difficult with any kind of an animal, dog or cat. I can't imagine if you have, larger animals in that kind of situation. Appreciate your call. Let me see here. We have... I thought we had somebody talking about winter. Apparently, winter is not as traumatic as some of the other bad weather situations. This is Carol. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Nice to talk to you.
Same here.
What was your What was your story?
Well, I remember that tornado. You were young, and I was young. I was at Old Orchard Junior High in Skokie, and I was on the top floor of our junior high. And the windows were open because it was a wonderful day. And then I noticed that the birds weren't singing.
Oh, wow.
And then I noticed the sky was turning green, like you mentioned. And then I started seeing paper flying parallel to the ground.
Mm.
And then the alarm went off, and everybody was prepared to go and sit on the floor with their head tucked into their knees
duck and cover
in the center, away from the windows.
Yeah.
And we evacuated our room, but there was one young girl that was frozen. That's what happens with sometimes with people. They don't move. So I ran back in and I yanked her out of her desk, and we got into the hallway, and then boom, it happened.
Oh, wow.
The roof was blown off. There was a bus, I think, that turned over. The flagpole actually bent, and we were let out of school.
Yeah.
So that was great.
Yeah, that's when you're a kid, that's all you care about. I don't have to go to school. That's fantastic.
My parents are losing their hair with
yeah, right. We're the kids. Well, wow, you saved somebody's life.
I don't know if I saved somebody's life, but I
sounds,
just...
If she was frozen and, the tornado frozen. Hit, it sounds like you pulled her out of harm's way. But it just kind of, brings us back as South Florida is getting ready, you know, for this, what probably will be Category 4 by the time it hits landfall in South Florida,
right.
You know, the kinds of things that they need to prepare for. So, you know, as we think
right.
about our own stories, yeah, we think about our own stories, but, you know, say a prayer for the people who are going to have to go through this next couple of days. I appreciate your call. Thank you. We're going to update news in just a minute. WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Taking big thoughts someplace else today. John's off. It's Dean Richards. Nice to have you in with us today. We've got a lot planned between now and 3 o'clock. Thought we'd spend a little bit of time talking about Mayor Lightfoot's television address last night, talking about the budget gap at $838 million. She said that we walked into a staggeringly large budget deficit for next year, and what's worse, we're not left with any credible plan how to fix this massive problem. She, you know, talked about some ideas, some things that she wanted to do, some things that she hoped might happen, some things that she would rather not do. You've been hearing about it all day long in the news, but I wanted to get the perspective of some people who have some background in city politics, and certainly one of those is Dick Simpson, who has been a professor of political science since 1967 at the University of Illinois, Chicago, a two-term alderman in Chicago, 1971 to 79, in the 44th Ward. You see him frequently on television shows talking about politics. He's recently written a book called The Good Fight, Life Lessons from a Chicago Progressive. Alderman Simpson, welcome. Nice to talk to you again.
I'm glad to do so.
I've mentioned this one other time. The other thing that I will always remember Dick Simpson for, he's the only college professor in my entire college career who flunked me in a class. And I deserved it. I 100% deserved it.
Yeah, you've certainly improved a good bit.
Well, I took a lesson from that F that you gave me and tried to do a little better. What was your overall take of Mayor Lightfoot's speech last night?
I think it's the beginning point of a conversation that's very important for the city of Chicago. We really have to get our financial house in order once and for all so that we have a good starting point. I think there were a lot of good things in the speech, but mostly it lays the groundwork for the debate and the discussion we need to have in the future.
Did you hear things that we've heard before? I mean, I think just about every new mayor that I can think of came in and said they've inherited all kinds of problems and we need to get these problems under control, and then business as usual starts to take place, and nothing ever gets done, and the problem gets worse.
I think it is true that nearly every mayor that comes in complains about the debt that was left by the previous mayor. This is the largest structural gap or debt or deficit or problem of any of the other mayors. Usually, in past times, it's been $100 million or $200 million that was not anticipated, that had to be made up. This time, $838 billion is an enormous number because our operating budget is only $10 billion.
She talked about new ways of bringing other revenue to the city with gambling and with marijuana, and things that, you know, probably would have never been considered when you were in the city council. Are those good ideas? Are there avenues that she has not explored?
Well, there are going to be a number to be explored. I'll give you an example. That one that wasn't mentioned is we will need to transfer some of the money from the TIF funds, the tax increment finance funds, and there is more than $1 billion there. That's not entirely free money, but it certainly makes sense, as we did last year under Mayor Emanuel, to take part of that money and to it isn't all go to the city. Part of it goes to the schools, but the schools also need the money. So it's a relatively painless option. that could solve maybe as much as $100 million of the gap. Could be more, but you can't use it all because it's our only economic development tool. So there are other things we can do. The problems with things like the gambling and most of the other of those solutions is they won't have any effect by next year. As the mayor put it, it's not that anybody is really all that excited about increasing gambling, but there may not be much choice if we're going to have less pain. There, overall, about half of the $838 million is going to be made up by cuts in city government, including services, and about half of it is going to have to be made up in new revenue. And the new revenue is the painful part.
Yeah. Will there be cooperation? Because one of the other things that we've seen over and over and over again when a new mayor comes in and tries to do things is that roadblocks go up like crazy from political opposition. In this case, it may come from downstate, from other places. Will Mayor Lightfoot find cooperation both in her own house, in city council, and from Springfield?
Well, I think Springfield will be able to help some, but as Greg Harris, who's the floor leader for the Democrats in the House, put it, it's really a heavy ask. That is, she's asking the state to do a number of different things to help solve the pension problem, to straighten out the gambling casino issue, because the way it's structured currently, we can't build the casino. We have to change the structure a bit before we can, and so on. The downstate people aren't really thrilled with these ideas because they see it as Chicago just getting a free handout from the state. They don't realize that we're 80% of the state's economy and Chicago has to do well or the state doesn't do well. But it's we will get some help from the state. I don't know whether we can get enough help to solve everything. I think we can get started on it. You know, the casino, solving the casino thing is relatively simple. It's just we have to take a little less money for the city and a little less money from the state to be able to make the casino viable. And, of course, we have to find a place for it. But even if we did that, it won't make any difference to this budget to speak of.
I don't know too many people who have the kind of perspective on Chicago politics as you do. Do you see us in a place that's different in Chicago than we have been in the past when new administrations come in, new people come in and say they want to, you know, change everything?
I think we're the most similar time as the Harold Washington administration, and the difference between the two is, of course, Harold confronted the council wars and had 29 opponents in the city council, and everything got blocked and then had to be worked out. It actually, even though it was a terrible yelling and screaming and carrying on, and it was one of our most productive periods in Chicago history, and then Harold eventually got the majority and was able, in the last 7 months of his life, to move forward on things like the ethics ordinance for the first time in Chicago history. Lightfoot has a better situation. She has a majority of the city council. You mentioned opposition, though, and I've watched the budgets for 50 years. This is the one issue on which the aldermen will split. They hate to vote for anything like a property tax increase on their constituents. Even under Emanuel, 15 aldermen voted against the budget in 2016 when he raise taxes by $733 million. There's going to be pushback without a doubt in the city council if there is anything like the property tax, and there almost certainly will have to be something of that sort as part of the mix.
Dick Simpson's new book, a fairly new book, is called The Good Fight, Life Lessons from a Chicago Progressive. If you're interested in Chicago politics, this is the man who knows all about it, and this book is a must-read for you. I appreciate that you could take a little time for us today, Alderman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve, and I'm sure that with your listeners, there's going to be a continual conversation because this is a problem we have to solve, and there may be some good ideas yet to come in that we haven't thought of.
Alderman Dick Simpson, thank you very much. University of Illinois political science professor. In a moment, we'll be joined by Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who did not have a very good review for the mayor after last night's speech. We'll talk about that when we come back next. WGN. Dean Richards in for John Williams today. 720 WGN as we kick off this holiday weekend. A little bit of follow-up to Mayor Lightfoot's speech last night outlining some of the budget problems that we've got here in the city of Chicago. Some have been very positive in their responses. Others have looked at it with a less positive view. Alderman Raymond Lopez, the 15th Ward, said that Mayor Lightfoot's speech was a paradox in prime time. I love the alliteration there. He said a PR stunt. Alderman Lopez is on the phone line with us right now. Alderman, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So what have your, I'm sure you've been hearing from constituents all day in the 15th Ward. What are they telling you about what happened last night?
You know, I think a lot of people are just disappointed that they didn't get more specifics out of the mayor's speech. You know, I think a lot of people are aware that there's some sort of looming financial crisis on the horizon, but people were hoping to hear what those specifically were and what her specific plans to address those financial issues were going to be. And we got a lot of alliteration, a lot of platitudes. You know, we're in this together, one big happy kumbaya. But that's not what people want. They want to know the truth. They want to know flat out what it is and what do we got to do to get away from it. And they didn't get that last night at all.
Yeah, then the mayor said that she was going to be talking more specifically in her budget address in October, though, right?
Well, I mean, she'll have to lay out the specifics when she produces her budget in October. But I think for all the hype, pomp, and circumstance that was leading up to this speech and all the suspense she was trying to build, you know, she kind of fell flat a little bit. You know, the only time, she only referenced solid numbers six times in that 24-page speech. And, you know, some of them we knew, some of them we didn't, and some of them we just don't have the raw data to prove that she's correct on them. So, you know, I hope as we have this conversation, we see that the deficit is $1 billion. I know, you know, she said, well, we're down to 838, but we don't even know how she got from $1 billion to 838. And there's a lot of things still on the horizon coming towards Chicago taxpayers, not just for the city of Chicago, but also when it comes to how the Board of Education is going to come up with the extra $300 million that the teachers want from their new contract.
Yeah, I certainly have no insight, but it sure sounded like that she said specifically that she would have more details in the actual budget address that was coming up. And would you agree that she just sort of laid the groundwork of, you know, sort of a state of this mess that we're in right now?
Well, I think she's laying the groundwork for a property tax, first and foremost, because by saying that if the legislature doesn't give her what she wants, in terms of casino revenue and other options, she's going to put all the burden on property taxes. She also opened the door for a commuter tax to hit the people who drive into the city for work. And I think she's, you know, going down the path that, you know, Rahm Emanuel did when he first ran, which was to go after all kinds of the services that are not currently taxed, things that were dubbed in 2011 as the Rahm taxes. You know, I think she's going to have to start looking at some of those items that people didn't necessarily support 8 years ago if she hopes to have a sustainable budget moving forward. Because, look, this $1 billion we're talking about today, it's going to be another $500 million, almost $700 million in next year and every year after that because of the automatic increases in pensions that are required by law.
Right, and until we you know, take the bull by the horns, so to speak. Just so it's clear, she said she rejected a property tax increase but left the door open for it. And additional taxes, she said that she would try to put the burden more on less on people who can least afford those changes and more on people who are making more money, right?
Well, and I think that was part of the reason why my alliteration is so fitting, this paradox in prime time, because you're saying, you know, I'm closing the door on property taxes, but I'm going to leave that door open if I don't get my way with some of the other issues.
Right.
What, you know, we want an equitable and fair budget, but we want only certain people to pay for it. You know, there are a lot of contradictions in her speech as she was rolling through it. And that if you're having a discussion about one Chicago where we're all in this together and we're all trying to come to a positive end together, then you can't, you know, start picking and choosing and playing this class warfare that your speech alluded to,
yeah,
despite the fact that you said you want to put an end to that.
What would you like to, very specific, you know, as specific as we can be right now, what would you like to see her do?
Well, I think for starters, you know, the hiring freeze was great, but, you know, there's an easy way to trim $200 million out of our budget, and that's simply to remove all these unfilled positions that are in the budget that taxpayers are asked to pay for, that the administration before her and the current one have refused to fill. So take $200 million right off the budget just by eliminating those positions. Additionally, there are some things that we can do to streamline city government. But you will have to ultimately raise taxes in this city. You know, we forget that for 20-plus years under Mayor Daley, property taxes never once were increased, but yet costs kept going up, contracts kept getting approved, and the quality and standard of life in the Chicago neighborhoods continuously went up, despite not moving the needle on property taxes. So we haven't kept pace with our revenues have not kept pace with our spending. And if we want to break that habit or at least catch up, you know, we have to bite the bullet and seriously look at raising property taxes, expanding the reach of our sales tax to include more items. You know, I'm notably a dog lover. I have six dogs at home, but yet when I go for grooming and things of that nature, none of those items are taxed. You know, it's a $1 billion industry that we're missing out on. So we really have to look at how we can expand our taxable options in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, these are more issues than we can deal with in a short period of time. I'm sure we'll be hearing more. We'd love to have you back sometime as you know, more developments come up with this, so you can lay out what you think about it. We'd like to get all the points of view on the table here and listen to everybody. Appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
All for Chicago. Thank you, Dean.
I don't have to participate in every stupid-ass Chicago tradition.
If Michael Jordan thought like that, this city would only have 5 championships.
This is Chicago, and this is Chicago's newest side hustle.
I'm getting a little sick and tired of you and my brother taking advantage of my kindness.
When Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle came on our WGN-TV morning news a few months ago, their show Southside on Comedy Central had not yet premiered. There's an awful lot of potential, awful lot of good feelings about it, but this show has been one of the hits of the television series and just scored a second season renewal. Bashir and Diallo, welcome back. It's nice to talk to you guys.
Hey, how are you? It's good to be back on the phone. How are you doing?
Great to have you here. Congratulations on the renewal. I feel like it's kind of proud of, you know, this pretty much all Chicago production that you know, is doing so well, and you know, all of America seems to have taken to it.
Yeah, we're really happy. I think a lot of folk who watch the show who are from Chicago can't believe just how Chicago it is, and they go, wow, like, what's the rest of the country think? Are they getting these jokes? We're really fortunate, you know, we wrote it so that everybody would love it, and in fact, you know, one of my favorite comments online was some guy wrote, you know, I'm from Virginia, I've never been to Chicago, this is my favorite show. I think, you know, with our TV show, because we're so specific about the things that are in Chicago, I think people really do feel like we've let them into a whole new world. And people are excited to look around and have fun with us.
But there's also something very universal, don't you think, about the comedy that you're writing? Even though it's about Chicago, in a sense, it's really about every place.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I was just talking to, you know, somebody who's like a really high, you know, high-level attorney, makes a lot of money. But he also has a couple of side businesses that he's trying to get, you know, launched off the ground. One of my favorite shows on TV is a show called Billions, actually. And one of the main storylines there for the second season was about them trying to start a side project. So I think, you know, to your question, the idea that despite whatever job you have, you kind of want to do something more. You want to get another hustle going, something that maybe you feel more passionate about. I think everybody can relate to that. So on our show, it happens on a blue-collar level, but, you know, luckily people all over the country and in even other countries, I know we're on in Canada, have been like, yeah, we totally understand what it is to feel, you know, to feel stuck and to feel like you want to do something more and you got more to offer the world. And those types of notes have been resonating with everybody.
But also,
I do have a friend. I have a friend in Toronto who just hits us up all the time and is just like, man, I just love this show so much. Like, you know, the Canadians, shout out so to nice. Canada. They're loving Chicago and Canada.
These characters are so rich and funny yeah. and dimensional. And really lovable, you know, for all of their dysfunction, very, very lovable that, you know, even the Canadians love, apparently.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is really the size of Game of Thrones at this point.
I mean, like, there's so many people involved.
Characters on the show, but a lot of these people are based on real people, and that's just the cool part. I think a lot of people were getting a bad idea about what Chicago is all about just because of like the news sure. every day, and like we're just sort of restoring, hey guys, by the way, Chicago's an amazing, amazing city, and that's one of the sweetest things about the success of this show.
Yeah.
Well, just really quickly, I was going to also say, we did a great job with who we put in front of the camera, and we really wanted our actors, and some of them weren't even actors before. You know, I'm sure folks can tell some of these people are really just regular people who we think are hilarious, but they bring so much to these characters. And so no matter what we wrote in the writer room, once we started shooting, all these talented actors just brought a whole new dimension. And I think that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the other things that I really like is how many jobs you are creating in Chicago.
I really feel the same way.
You know, it's actors, it's production people, it's technicians, yep. it's caterers. I mean, there is a lot of work that is coming out of a successful television show that comes mm-hmm. out of Chicago, and mostly it's CineSpace, right, on the Near West Side?
Yeah. You know, CineSpace is really, you know, it's really the center for a lot of Chicago television production, which we, you know, began to learn as we shot, and I'm so happy that that's all sort of set up and in place before our show started. You know, they really made so much, you know, so many things easier. It's right there in the Near West Side. It's right near downtown. It's near a lot of freeways. Everybody can get there. So, you know, they've been a huge help for us. You know, and also I think along with the regular jobs that we're doing, you know, one of our actors, Sultan, plays the main character, Simon. He has a foundation where he's even trying to get more, you know, kids from the inner city who have no idea what it means to be a gaffer or a grip yeah. or, you know, a cinematographer, to kind of get their, you know, their feet wet, kind of learn some of these jobs.
Yeah, bring them to set and let them see all the behind the camera jobs that yeah. are totally. Available to them. Because, you know, a lot of times as a kid you watch TV, you're like, oh, I like this. Let me go off and be an actor. Like, we're telling them that there's so many different kinds of jobs happening behind the camera that, let's right. be honest, are even they're more stable employment than jumping in
yeah,
front of
seriously. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know that the you know, the brothers that own CineSpace, they've created programs, very similar programs as well, where they bring in people from the community. And they've got, I think it's called Stage 18 there, if I remember, where it's pretty much a classroom, you know, for people to learn how the business and all of the aspects of the business. So there's nothing but good things that are going on over there. And so many of the great, you know, TV shows that we see on network TV are all coming from there. And we just couldn't be happier for Southside. That's doing so well. What's the status right now? I know you got renewed.
We got renewed. We're celebrating. We're partying. We're also about to hopefully get our writer room. we're celebrating responsibly. We're going to get the writer room back up. You know, I think, you know, we really didn't celebrate that much, you know, when we got the first season, because you're still sort of introducing people to the show. We were so excited, but we really were like, we really want, you know, Chicago and America to really embrace the show. And I think with the second season order, now it's sort of more official that, yeah, the show has been embraced. People love it. You know, we read all the comments online. Chicago is really loving the show. They're really seeing themselves. I love when people see, you know, that they know somebody, like, oh, my God, that's my cousin. That's my friend, you know, whatever that stuff is. You know, it just makes us feel like, yep, that's what we wanted to do. We really wanted this to be something for everybody. So,
And I got to say, we're reading all the comments, and people really got to clean up their language. I mean, like, it's all positive, but it's just...
Come on, you know that makes it more entertaining when
it does. It really does.
Flowery language on social media.
We can't wait to get back to the city just to shoot again. You know, like we won't be shooting until sometime next year. But trust me, it's going to be so exciting to just be shooting. You know, with
with everybody, you know, in the South Side and all over the city.
I wondered.
And I would also just say that, you know, for those of you who are fans of the show or new to the show, the people you love, the people who are making you laugh and smile, the producers of the show love them too. We're going to have a lot of folks back, so you'll see some of your favorites season two.
I wondered if, you know, you're feeling a little more pressure now that the show is a hit. Everybody's watching your show now. You know, everyone's got the eye on it. I'm sure all the Comedy Central people are, you know, got their eye on it. Does that make it a little more difficult?
You know, I think we felt a tremendous responsibility. I can tell you a really quick story. When we were shooting, before the pilot, we shot this sort of like sizzle reel. And what that is we really took the three producers and some of the actors who ended up on the show, and we just went around the South Side and we just shot stuff that we thought was funny in order to give the network a taste of what we were trying to do. There was actually a couple people we ran into when we were shooting. This one cop stopped us, and he was basically like, you know what, I don't know if that's a good idea in this particular neighborhood, because, you know, I guess he had just seen something that had been challenging for him. And for us, we were like, oh, he's right. You know, there are some parts of the city that we really, you know, we do have to be aware of and be aware that they have more difficulty than other parts.
Right.
And nobody knew what we were doing, right? So there's nobody who even knew, oh, this is a show. And I would say we had so much pressure on us then because nobody knew what we were doing. And we essentially were like, you know, this weird, you know, singular entity that had this idea and nobody knew what the hell we were talking about. Now that everybody's seen it,
right,
I'm so excited, like the owl said, to get back out there and shoot, because now everybody knows what we're doing. You know, everybody's aware of what's going on. And so they go, oh, these are the guys that are really showing the funny side of the city. And I think the support has been incredible.
Well, you guys, I couldn't be happier for you with your second season renewal. Can't wait till you get back to town. We want to have you back on the WGN TV morning news as well. I want to come on your set sometime and
absolutely
show people what it's like behind the scenes.
Done deal, my friend. Done deal.
Making of this show.
But we want to give WGN an exclusive for season two. Definitely want to have them on set while we're shooting. I mean, it's, again, we really want Chicago to feel like this is their show. So, you know, WGN, when I was growing up, I mean, that's where I watched Bozo, and, you know, that was just like, for me, that was where I watched, you know, the Cubs, and they were playing. Like, WGN was like the heartbeat of the city, so we couldn't be happier to deepen that relationship.
I'm seeing a Bozo cameo coming on Southside this season.
You know, maybe one of our characters becomes the new Bozo season two. That would be hilarious. Got to bring that back.
I love it. Bashir and Diallo, Bashir Salahuddin and Diallo Riddle, the creators and executive producers and actors on Southside, that's on Comedy Central. It's great to talk to you guys again. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to seeing
you
guys soon.
Thank you so much, guys. And next week's episode is Super Duper Chicago. So please tune in next Wednesday night at 9:30.
That sounds good. Thanks, guys, very much.
Where'd all the people go? Yeah, I've got to know what could take them out there. Some knock while I'm on the clock. You better stop the operation, I swear.
2:51. This is Dean Richards in for John Williams, along with Elif and Lauren for the weekly feature of what's going on for the weekend. Elif, who are we listening to?
This is Young Bae, who is playing North Coast, the festival taking place today and tomorrow.
That's where John Williams is today?
Yeah.
He's just hanging out?
Totally. He's there with the kids.
John loves the kids, and the kids love John.
That's true.
I actually like this. This is not what I would expect from a North Coast band. I would expect it somehow to sound grungier, because it's kind of an alternative festival, right?
It's like really electronic DJs, EDM type stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, in all fairness, Bass Nectar and
Major Lazer.
Yeah, Major Lazer, Flux Pavilion are all going to be there, and they're, you know, not quite this calm.
So it takes place 3 to 11 at Northerly Island. Two-day tickets start at $70 on northcoastfestival.com.
Okay, that sounds good. I've got, I know you guys back and forth with the items, because this is sort of my area. You know, what's going on for the weekend, movies, music, theater, stuff like that. I'm also going to interject some things here as well. Is that all right?
Please do.
Will I be breaking any protocol?
No, not at all.
The WGN police will come and take me away if I...
The great thing about this is it's anything you can do for the weekend, so it's really vague. You could pick anything.
Anything.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. What do you have, Lauren?
Okay, well, I'll start with the Great American Lobster Fest because I am a big fan of lobster.
Right.
That's all weekend at Navy Pier, already underway. It started at noon. It goes till 10 tonight, and tomorrow it's 12 to 10, Sunday 12 to 9. But it's a bunch of lobster from the East Coast, so cold water lobster and everything. So the best of the best. This is with the provider Lobster Graham. But there's going to be live music and a bunch of games that people can play, activities, arts and crafts, and a bunch of other things. But a great event for people that are a big fan of lobster and good lobster.
Is this like a one price and you just go in and eat lobster till you're puking?
There are different things. So there are prices.
I'm pretty sure that's not on their poster.
No. So it's free to kind of just go, but there are different menu type items or different packages. So the prices kind of vary based on that.
Okay, but you know, if you love lobster.
Oh, yeah.
And this, you know,
that's like a once a year for me kind of thing. Because it's expensive.
It's expensive. Lobster is expensive. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a fun venue for something like this. You're right on the water.
Right.
Even though we don't catch lobster in Lake Michigan. No. But you feel like you're, you know, in like an eastern coastal city,
right,
or something.
Transfer elsewhere. And you actually get to try a bunch of different types of lobster dishes. You know, sometimes people just kind of do the standard tail. But I heard they're going to have, you know, lobster rolls. I heard of lobster nachos. So it's something really cool to check out.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Let me throw in another food. Well, this is food and music and arts and culture. The Taste of Polonia that's going on at the Copernicus Center in Jefferson Park.
Big Polish festival.
Yeah, it's. I think it's one of the biggest Polish festivals in the United States.
I think you're right.
But you want to talk about amazing food, like real deal.
Oh, pierogies.
Somebody's grandma was in the back making pierogies and, you know, the different goodies. That's what they serve all weekend long. It's out in their parking lot, but they also have music. They have dancing. My favorite thing, you know, I enjoy is when the older ladies get up and are doing the polka by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the guys won't get
dance.
Up. The guys won't get up. But then, but like Aunt Mary and Aunt Josephine, they get up. And they, you know, they just got their hair did, and you know, they're out there doing the beer barrel polka.
My family is Polish, so I would love to be there if I wasn't going to be away this weekend, because that just sounds like home and Christmas. You know, every holiday.
It's fun. It's fun, and it's like just one of the great things about you know, being in Chicago in this great melting pot in which we live. That there is, you know, there's also the African Festival of Arts that's going on this weekend in Washington Park.
Mm-hmm.
You got to enjoy these things in Chicago. You know, I hate to say it, winter's right around the corner.
Oh, please don't mention it.
But, you know, this, well, let's enjoy each other's cultures and food and music and dancing and all that.
Yeah, it's a good time and you learn something. Yeah. There's also the Bears Black Party tomorrow. I know we're all getting excited for football now that it's less than a week away. And especially, you know, we're all feeling very optimistic, so why not celebrate it tomorrow? It's 12 to 10. It's completely free at Logan Square, and there's live music, Bears alumni, food, drinks, a kids zone, photo ops, and plenty more. So if you're really excited for the season, I would suggest going to that.
Sounds good. Elif, what do you have? Oh, wait a second. I turned the microphone off.
That's okay.
Sorry.
I have Frankenstein playing.
I'm new in this business. Sorry.
Frankenstein is playing at the Looking Glass Theater tonight at 7:30, and then again tomorrow at 2 and 7:30.
I think this is the last weekend for Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein at the Looking Glass. I believe it wraps up this weekend.
Yeah, so tickets start at $55 on lookingglasstheater.org.
Okay, what else? What else do you have?
There's a September Fest in Schaumburg that's tomorrow through Monday. And kind of just a standard, a little bit of everything. So arts and crafts show, a carnival, live music, beer and wine tents. Taste of Schaumburg technically is a part of that. There's fireworks on Sunday. There's a parade on Monday at 10, and general admission is free. And then obviously you kind of buy things or, you know, carnival tickets, things like that. But Saturday 10 to 10, Sunday 9 to 10, Monday 9 to 9.
And Naperville's Last Fling is going on. That's traditional for the Labor Day weekend. Starts today, goes all weekend at Naperville North High School. Better Than Ezra will be playing.
Ooh,
that's cool.
I like them.
And one of my favorite street festival bands, 16 Candles.
Oh, nice.
I love them.
Wow, that's, they got the hookup.
Yeah, that's going on all weekend. Chicago Jazz Festival is going on.
Of course.
And I got to mention, at Ravinia, Queen Latifah and Common will be playing there tomorrow night. I'm going to be interviewing Common tomorrow afternoon.
Very nice.
We'll have that interview on the morning news next week.
Such a nice guy.
One of the best that there is. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday, Steely Dan. Sunday and Monday, Steely Dan performing at Ravinia.
Yeah, it's a good weekend for Ravinia. I think OAR is tonight.
OAR, I believe, is tonight. That's correct.
Wow.
Wrap it up for it, Asalif.
Okay, well, we have the Cubs playing the Brewers at home tomorrow again at 1:20. They played at the same time today. And then the White Sox are away playing the Braves tonight at 6:20. And pregame starts with Andy Mazur at 5:35.
Okay, now, so I want to just read an email because a lot of people are going to be grilling this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to mention, Steve and Dave Ennett and I were talking about the Grill Daddy this morning, which I know sounds crazy. I'm your Grill Daddy. But it's a steel brush to clean the grates on your grill.
Oh.
But there's a reservoir of water inside the handle of this Grill Daddy. So you heat up the grill, you turn the water on, and you clean the grill with the steel brushes, and it steam cleans your grill. It's
the greatest
thing ever. So somebody emailed me this afternoon and said, I heard you and Steve talking about it. I want to purchase one. I went online. There are a number of different models. Which do you recommend? And the one that I have is the Grill Daddy Pro. It's got a longer handle. It's better momentum. There's a smaller version. It's just called the regular Grill Daddy. I don't like that one. It's too small.
I like the longer one.
You can get a little muscle into it. So Grill Daddy Pro. I just wanted to mention that for anyone who's going to be doing any grilling this weekend. We're done with commercials, right?
Yeah.
And we are getting ready. Do we talk to Ro here now?
Yes. And Anna should be.
Is this how it works? I'm new in this business. Anyway, don't forget to listen Sunday morning, my regular Sunday morning show.
Of course.
Lauren, nice to work with you today. Elif, always nice to be with you.
You too.
And thank you, everybody, for listening today. All of our guests, we appreciate that. And is Ro and Anna there?
Yeah, if you hit the D button next to you.
I have to hit the D button.
There we go.
I'm fairly new in this business.
You got it.
Amazing technology.
Right.
Thing,
they just named that button after you, Dean.
I appreciate that.
It'll be forever known as the Dean button.
It is now known as the Dean button. Did I hear you're doing an all Carnarvon Friday today? All show today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Good luck to us. Kevin and I just went and stocked it, actually, which is really something.
I cannot wait to listen at around 5:30.
Oh, man.
When things start to slur.
This is going to be fantastic.
Ro was like, grab that one, that one, that one, that one. And we're at the checkout line. He goes, grab one more case of beer. Yeah. I go, okay.
Yeah. And you guys go get something for yourselves.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what I said. And actually, in honor of the end of the summer season and the end of the playpen season, we bought a case of White Claw, too.
Oh, God. Very nice.
Becca's going to show up.
Yeah. You got that. And this is a very special moment. We got one of my favorite bands of all times, Vertical Horizon, is here.
Nice.
Yes.
And they are going to be playing an acoustic afternoon for us.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be getting drunk with us for an all Carnarvon. We're going to have Lauren's List, which is similar to what you just did, Dean, but it's also
like story time, because as soon as I mention something, Kevin and Ro like to develop these characters and what's going on there for the weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little different. It's it's an hallucination more than it's anything else.
So that concept plus all the alcohol today.
It's going to be an interesting day.
Yes, exactly.
My liver hurts already, and it hasn't even started.
I know. Mine pulses. That's how I know I'm alive, Dean. I don't have a heartbeat. I got a pulse in my
liver.
Yeah. That's cool. Oh, God, I got it. All right, have a great weekend.
See you guys.
Thank you very much.